I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. When Anne Walmsley was living in Britain a few years ago, she was attacked in the street, leaving her with anxiety and fear. Upon returning to Canada, a friend suggests she help pick out books for a book club. She soon finds out that the club will meet in a prison, and its members are inmates. Her new book, The Prison Book Club, is a marvelous chronicle of the incarcerated men she encounters, as well as the books they read. Work through are the readers' feelings and thoughts about the books they're reading, the stories they're exploring, and the characters who inhabit them. The books are novels, they're nonfiction, their subjects are weighty and important. Anne begins to work through her own fears while she connects with these men who bear their feelings about what about that which they're reading. You get a sense of what they're going through behind bars, and in the end, everyone seems to get something meaningful from the book club, the prisoners as well as Anne. Anne Walmsley joins me now. I'll get her to tell us about this experience, the books, and the stimulating discussion had, and the themes of redemption, loss, anger, and connection that resonate throughout the book. It'll also be interesting to touch upon some of the books featured in the book clubs. She is a magazine journalist whose work has appeared in the Globe and Mail and Maclean's. She has received 4 national magazine awards, a Canadian Business Journalism Award, and 2 international regional magazine awards. She lives in Toronto but joined me from here in Vancouver last week while in town for appearances promoting the book, which incidentally has been longlisted for the BC National Award for Nonfiction. The book is published by Viking. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program Anne Walmsley. Ms. Walmsley, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So I have friends who belong to book clubs, and I understand that you were 9 when you founded your first one?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, I grew up in Prince Edward County in Ontario, and there was a long tradition of a literary society there going back almost to the 19th century called Tennyson Club, and my parents were members of it. So when I was young, I would often hear people meeting in our living room and giving papers on books, which inspired me to start my book club at age 9. But I was also, you know, a very avid reader. I'd get 7 books out of the library on a Saturday and come back the next Saturday and switch them again.
So how do you sell people on the premise of being part of one? Because reading is a solitary process. And so, but after reading your book, I get the sense that as a reader, it is useful. And there's just another dimension to the book that can be had when you're with a group of people who've read the book and you're immersed in discussion and debate even sometimes.
Oh, you're quite right. It's 2 quite different things. There's that very private thing that you do when you read a book, maybe curled up in a chair or in bed in the evening. And it's an immersive escape where you step into the shoes of the character. You may travel to different countries, and for a while you sort of lose touch with where you are and who you are. And it's a great process personally for opening your mind. But then the book club process is so very different. It's a social connection. It's bringing your ideas of the book to a group of people and sort of testing them and seeing what other people got from the book. And also, it's this kind of cooperative detective work, because often books don't, you know, provide you with all the answers, or they wind up in a way that's unclear. And so with your friends in the book club, you can sort of sort out what actually happened, and also how you felt about the characters. You might not ask yourself that as you're reading along. You're just sort of swept up in it. Mm-hmm. But when you're together with your book club friends, you're saying, you know, which characters did you like? Which ones didn't you like, and why? And we began to know ourselves better. But there's one other thing that I found, and this was this sense of, when you sit down with a group of people and discuss a book together, that actually becomes a separate memory, a shared moment, and your histories briefly intertwine mm-hmm. during that experience. So now, when you think about the book, you think about, you know, who was wearing what that day, and what they said, and what debate erupted, and who made the comment that sparked a whole new understanding of the book. And it's a very different and wonderful meaning-creating process to join a book club.
So the book clubs that you had been a member of, that you'd founded at some points in your life, are very different than the ones that you write about in this book, the ones that took place behind bars in prison. So it was your friend Carol Finley, I guess, she was the one who suggested it?
That's right. Yeah, she was in my woman's book club in Toronto. She had run out of ideas for books and was wondering if I could just help her with the book selection process. And, you know, I readily agreed to doing that. And then she said, well, you know, actually, in order to choose books for men, you have to come into the prison and hear what they say about the books,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. But I hadn't thought about that when I first said yes.
Yeah.
It took me a while to decide to go in, but I did in the end.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I mentioned in the introduction that you had been attacked on the street, and this had left you with PTSD, didn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't full-fledged post-traumatic stress disorder, but there were symptoms. I had peripheral startle reflexes. If anybody came at me from the left or the right, I'd startle. I was terribly afraid of walking in the streets of London at night. It was a violent attack. I was two men grabbed me in a chokehold outside of our house without saying what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
It was about 9 o'clock at night, and they strangled me in that chokehold till I was unconscious. And then they took my cell phone.
Yeah.
So
I mean, having gone through that, and then now having to go to a prison, I mean, that must have taken a lot of work on your part.
Yeah, luckily, there are about 8 years dividing the time of the attack and going into the prison. Also, the attack occurred in London, and I went into a prison in Canada, so it felt different in some ways. But yes, it was a federal prison, so we're talking about violent offenders.
Mm-hmm.
These men had committed offenses ranging from, you know, murder to bank robbery, drug trafficking, extortion. And, you know, I really wasn't aware of what kind of conditions I would see inside the prison.
So the prisoners themselves that you encounter, that you meet, I mean, they ranged in terms of whatever crimes they were in for. So I mean, what's it like then to go into that setting and then, having gone through what you've gone through, and sort of find out or even just speculate as to what these guys have done or are capable of?
Well, it's kind of funny because in the first couple of times you go in, you actually don't know. I didn't know what they had done. As you talk about the books, you're talking about the moral decisions quite often that mm-hmm. the characters have made. And they're offering their views about whether a character is good or bad or made the right decision. And so your first impression is, well, at first that they're very close readers and that they've read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, that they actually have a moral code. And that for some of them it was a very strong affiliation to family above all else. And for others, it was different kinds of decisions, but very clear ideas about good and evil. And that immediately made me feel comfortable because I think my first feeling in that sort of period right after the attack, and I know other people who've been attacked feel the same way, it's this sense that there's evil around you. And what you're looking for as you walk down the street are faces of people who have goodness in them, people who would have saved you if you had been attacked and they had been in the vicinity. So that was comforting to see their ability to judge characters.
And in terms of the men themselves who were part of the book clubs, I guess their education obviously varied. Reading level as well? Did that factor in sort of the selection of the books?
Yeah, I mean, right from the outset, Carol structured this book club to be like book clubs everywhere across the country. You know, reading good literary fiction and nonfiction that, was at a fairly high level. So that meant that fellows who had a lower literacy level, some of them tried to participate and were able to improve their reading skills, and others just weren't quite at that level, so they weren't able to continue with the group. But you know, that idea is a really great idea, because what it meant is that the men could read these books that everyone else is reading, and when they get out of prison, they are now able to connect with a broader social network, you know, people who read books instead of their old criminal associates.
Yeah.
But I should say, too, that in some of the prisons where somebody is having difficulty in one of these book clubs, the other inmates will sometimes help them, encourage them in their reading, read aloud to them. There was one inmate who was blind in one of the other book clubs, and the inmates read the books to him.
Hmm. And some of them just came for the cookies, right?
Ah, yes. Some of them just came for the cookies, it's true. We soon, you know, we learned about that. We decided no more cookies now, it's just coffee.
Yeah. What I found quite fascinating is because I've interviewed some of the authors of the books that you've discussed, and some of them, I guess most of them, when the books came out. And so a few years later, to read your book and then see the sort of discussions that they've spurred on, it's just fascinating to me, because I remember having to, you know, trying to finish the books in preparation for an interview and not reading it as closely or as thoughtfully as you all did in the book club.
Well, inmates certainly have a lot of time on their hands. But it's, you're right. I've sent the book to a number of authors, to Andrea Levy and Malcolm Gladwell,
mm-hmm.
Diane Ackerman, who wrote The Zookeeper's Wife, because I thought they might be very interested to see what the men would say about their books, and to see how closely read they are, perhaps more insightfully and closely read than other readers, even though their education level is more lacking.
Yeah, and one of the fascinating books discussions in the book is Ian Brown's The Boy in the Moon, and I remember when I read that book, I thought it was a beautiful book. And I realized after reading the Prison Book Club that we read books really with ourselves in them. And that's a sense that I got from the prisoners who'd read it in that book club and the way that I read it. And you know, they're completely different points of view, obviously. But, when you talk to an author, I don't know if you've talked to Ian about this, but the sort of insights that the prisoners had about the book, I guess made the book all the more different, even for me. I mean, the way that I think about it now is probably colored by the way the prisoners read it.
Exactly. Well, you know, Ian Brown is actually a friend of mine from university, and I thought it was a beautiful book, The Boy in the Moon, and so did Carol, and that's why we wanted the men to read it. And it's a story of how he and his wife encountered these incredible obstacles looking after their severely disabled child, and you know, didn't sleep two nights in a row because they had to stay up with their son Walker. So, I mean, I felt incredibly for both of them. But, you know, we discovered with the men that they didn't quite share our point of view. I mean, they saw Ian as somebody who had many advantages in life that they didn't have. Great education, all kinds of resources, the ability to hire a nanny.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about, you know, other families that they knew who had disabled or mentally ill children, who had much fewer resources and had extreme difficulty. And when I remember one guy saying, well, they're not complaining, you know. So poor Ian, because, I mean, it is a beautiful book, but we do each come to a book with our own background.
And the insight that you got from them, from the prisoners in that book club, I mean, I don't think you could get that from anywhere. I mean, if you just sat down and had a coffee with them, I don't think you would get that stuff from inside of them out.
That's right. You know, one of the inmates told me later that a fellow who was in that book club who was particularly harsh on Ian's ruminations about, and this was sort of a comic rumination about, you know, things were so desperate that he might as well take his own life and take Walker's life.
Uh-huh.
Well, there was a murderer in the book club that day, and he had been fairly intransigent in all the correctional programs he'd been in for violence prevention. And yet when he read this book, according to another inmate, it sort of reformed him.
Yeah.
On the whole notion of whether it's right to take another person's life.
I read Ian, I don't know if you've read Ian's new book, 60?
Not yet.
I don't think they'd like it.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, he complains. It's a beautiful book, by the way. I had him on when it came out, and I liked it. But, I mean, there's stuff in there that he complains about being 60, but not having enough money and things like that, that I think the prisoners would probably find distasteful.
Maybe so. But I think if they actually met him, you know, I think they'd like the man's man that he in it.
Oh, isn't he just a great guy? I've never met him, but I've talked to him a couple times, obviously, for his books, and he's just a colorful, just a neat guy, I think, you know?
Very intelligent.
Yeah. So there were other authors who participated. Lawrence Hill, I guess, appeared at one of the meetings. Is that right?
That's right. He came in to discuss the Book of Negroes with the men. And it was a great discussion because one of the fellows, a fellow named Ben, said, "You always cultivate this grace in all your books." And, you know, I went out for lunch with Lawrence Hill after that, and he said, "You know, no one has ever said that to me. No one has had that insight into the book." And yet, once it had been said, then he realized, yes, I think that is what I'm trying to show, grace and dignity of these characters who encounter horrific circumstances, like Aminata in Book of Negroes.
Yeah, and then Roddy Doyle, I guess he participated. He answered, I guess, questions via email. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And that was about the woman who walked into doors.
Yeah.
Which is about domestic abuse.
Yeah, and the discussion in that club, I mean, was just utterly fascinating because, I mean, some of the prisoners in the book had experienced that firsthand.
That's right. One fellow had, at a very young age, I think he was 5, had been dangled by his father by his heels or his ankles over a balcony because the child had attempted to protect his mother in a domestic abuse situation. And then the mother and the children ended up living in a shelter for a while. But then another fellow around the circle also was so candid about saying, you know, I'm actually in a domestic abuse prevention program here in the prison.
Mm.
It was part of his correctional plan. And, you know, not a lot of people would be willing to confess that. And yet he was.
So we're talking this week where, I guess, Stephen Galloway's in the news, and we're not going to speculate on why. But his book, The Cellist of Sarajevo, impacted a lot of people when that book came out. And over the years, I mean, it's a subject of book clubs, and as it was in one prison. In terms of that book and how it resonated with readers, it got quite a visceral reaction, didn't it, from readers?
Well, yes. I mean, they were so interested in the idea of multiple narration, for one thing.
Yeah.
Some of them had not encountered that before. You have, of course, the female protagonist, Arrow, who's a female sniper, which is interesting. And they did identify with Arrow because she did stand up to her handlers at one point and wasn't going to undertake acts of killing civilians just because her handlers told her to. They were all in agreement about that. But some of them, one in particular, was resistant to the idea that humanity was a major theme in the book, or that certain characters displayed a degree of humanity. And he dug in his heels. And often we had quite animated debates, nothing that would ever end up in a sense of being violent or anything like that, but people who stood their ground.
Yeah, and it's just, and some of the impressions that they got out of the book were just quite moving. I remember in particular that interview, because I remember I was rushing the book to finish it, to prepare for the interview. And I remember asking Galloway at the time, whether he had traveled to those places that he writes about in the book, and he said no. And then I sent it to a friend who was from that part of the world, and he told me that he couldn't believe that the guy who wrote the book hadn't been in that part of the world, because he had been in war, he had been in that part of the world, and he had known that, and he just assumed that the guy had known it quite well.
Really? Is that right? Well, yeah. It is a masterful book, and I think one of the reasons, I think somebody called it book club catnip, is that there are a number of moments in the book that you can't untangle on your own. You actually need to sit down with a group of people and figure out, you know, was it, did Arrow, you know, get the other sniper, or who pulled the trigger, and exactly at what moment, and that's the signature of a great novelist, the person who knows what not to tell.
And
I agree, it's a masterful book, and I have to tell you that particular book, at the time that I was participating in the book clubs, was used, I think, to start every single inaugural book club discussion whenever a book club was introduced in a new prison. And Carol would bring the music that the cellist played and play that music for the men. And that really set the tone emotionally, because it's such a dirge. It's, you know... You feel like crying when you hear it.
It's funny, because I'm just remembering now, going back, I can't remember how long that book's been out now, I guess 8 years or so, and I didn't finish the book before the interview. And what really surprised me years later is I would see links to the site for the interview, classrooms in Ontario and elsewhere in the country, linking the interview, because I guess the teacher had assigned it to the students as they were reading the book. The other thing about that piece of music, I remember when I was reading about it in the book, I didn't know. I mean, you know, it's a tune that's in your head, I guess, but you can't really place it. So I was reading the book, not really knowing what the piece of music was. And then I remember just before the interview, I went on YouTube and looked it up, and just to listen to it to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And it just, I don't know, I knew which piece of music it was eventually, and it just struck a chord. Listening to that piece of music and remembering, you know, bits of the book that I had read up to that point.
Yes, and I'm trying to remember the name of the composer.
Al Bononi.
Al Bononi, exactly. Good, because I think maybe some of your listeners, after hearing what we've just been saying, will want to go and listen to it.
We learn in the book, The Prison Book Club, just how to be a thoughtful reader, and I guess now I realize the appeal of joining a book club, because you have to read carefully, in a way.
Yes, you do. I mean, you always can say nothing if you feel uncomfortable or if you feel shy. You know, it's never compulsory. It's meant to be fun. But yeah, you know, even the guys in the prison who had no obligation whatsoever to finish the book once they joined, you know, they felt a great deal of pride about doing so. And we did get excuses once in a while. You know, I remember one fellow said he couldn't finish it because the sewer backed up in the prison, and so there was all kinds of effluent in the bottom of his cell, and his book was floating on top of that. And, you know, the facilitator said, well, that's better than the dog ate my homework, you know. Yeah, but they do come with the book read, or largely read, and also sometimes you see people have noted down page numbers because they found a passage that they want to share. And that was particularly true of Cellist of Sarajevo. I remember there was a passage about the people, you know, you're only accepting death if you, the people of Sarajevo, become like the men in the hills. And somebody quoted that passage, and all the others said, yes, that's the heart of the book.
Yeah. Do you still go to prisons today?
No, I don't. I went for 18 months, and then I realized I needed to, you know, start thinking about the book and working on the book.
Yeah.
And so I stopped going in. And also I was starting to follow the men as they got out of prison.
Yeah.
When they were out on parole. And I would meet them outside the prison and give them books and we'd have coffee and I'd keep track of how they're doing.
And so some of them that are mentioned in the book, that are depicted in the book, have they read the Prison Book Club yet?
Oh, yes, some have.
Yeah.
Well, at least in the week before the book came out, I was able to meet with three of the six fellows who I profile most closely in the book and gave them copies of the book. And one of them got back to me saying, he was so glad to be reminded of how he felt during that period and how things were for him and how he was able to create something so positive out of something so negative. So it's really wonderful that they're happy with it. You know, some of them wanted me to use their real names.
Hmm.
And I just felt that wouldn't be a great idea, that I should use pseudonyms, and so that was what I insisted on.
Yeah.
Because I thought maybe, you know, their children later, who might not have been told that the father was in jail or the mother was in jail, would find out through the book. So instead I chose pseudonyms.
The other thing that struck me in reading the book, because I don't drive, was just how much driving there was. I just realized why, because I guess we don't live around the corner from a prison, that mm-hmm. you would have to commute, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I lived in Toronto, so I had to drive 2.5 hours to get down to each of the prison book clubs, and sometimes it was a real gamble because en route something might happen in the prison and there'd be a lockdown.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, that did happen once. I arrived to see a guard being taken out and placed in an ambulance. He'd been attacked by one of the inmates. And the guard had tried to take away his halal cooking pot. And the inmate had grabbed a cribbage board and hit him over the head and then stabbed him in the neck with a pencil. So they didn't let me into the prison that day. So I had to just drive back to Toronto.
Yeah. The other thing, there are marvelous pieces of advice in the book. I guess your dad had told you that if you expect something of someone, they'll usually rise to the occasion.
That's right.
It's just powerful.
It's
terribly wise.
He was an Ontario court judge, so he had seen, you know, people who had done difficult or dangerous, violent things. And he said that to me back in 2000. We were sort of on a millennial drive down Highway 1 in California, father-daughter road trip. And he went up to these menacing-looking guys and asked for directions. And I was saying, Dad, don't do that. And that's when he said to me, if you expect the best of people, they will rise to the occasion. And that advice is what I took to heart in order to go into the book clubs.
Yeah, the Prison Book Club, Anne, is just a beautiful book, and I hope it continues to do well for you, because a lot of people should read it, and I'd be very interested to know what people in prison think once they've read the book. And has that happened already, by the way?
Well, yes, thank you actually for asking that, because I just came back from my UK book tour, and English Pen facilitated visits for me into two prisons in South London. And one of them, I met with 15 to 18 guys in a library there. They were all given a copy of the book. And so it's like my story came full circle.
Yeah.
They got to read a book about a prison book club, and I was back in the UK where I had been originally attacked.
Yeah. Well, thanks for this, Anne. I've kept you longer than I said I would, but I've enjoyed the discussion as I've enjoyed the book.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking.
The book is called The Prison Book Club. It's published by Viking. Its author, Anne Walmsley, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunto.